We're broadcasting from the Middle Tennessee Electric Studios. Visit mte.com. Middle Tennessee Electric.
Serving to make life better
since 1936.
This is WGNS talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. Talking with Rutherford County newsmakers for 78 years. This is WGNS Action Line. Now, your host, Scott Walker.
Today in studio, we have Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey. How are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great, Scott. How are you?
I'm good. So we had a lot of rain over the past weekend, and I'm curious, I didn't really pay attention coming in this morning, but are the creeks and rivers flooded this morning?
They're not in too bad a shape. We did have quite a bit of rain this weekend, but no flooding.
When things are flooded and when temperatures are warmer, I know you've had a lot of water rescues from people doing kind of stupid stuff, like getting in the river with canoes and kayaks.
That is true. Some people, when the water gets up, they think it would be a better opportunity to go out kayaking, a little more adventurous than the calm water. That happens, and you know, sometimes it's a little bit more than what they can take, and we have to go after and rescue them.
Looks fun until something happens.
Exactly. And also, we had, I think it was last year, we had that tragedy out in the county where a kid gotten drawn into a drain. You know, that's tempting too, high water and ditches and stuff for kids to play with, but you never can know where that strangler's at that's taking that water in. That's going to be dangerous too, because I've seen that happen in the past too, not just kayaking, but kids playing in the water.
Now, those drains and neighborhoods and everything, how does that system usually work?
Well, it's a gravity fed. You know, it's usually a drainage ditch. Sometimes it'll have culverts where it goes under a driveway or maybe under a road or something like that, and they fill up. And you may not know that drain's there. And of course, there's an undertow right there where that drain is going under the road, and it can pull you under.
I guess some a little bit stronger than others, depending on how big of a drainage system it is.
Exactly.
Now, over the last week or so, you guys had quite a few calls to houses.
We have. April, we run about 2,200 calls. This month, we run close to 1,900. But our fire calls were up. We had several unattended cooking calls last month.
Now, when you say unattended, do people literally leave the house, or what does that usually look like?
Well, it is. It happens. We've had one this time. I know that someone put something on the stove. I don't know if they forgot about it or just going to run to the store and wasn't thinking, created a fire, you know, unattended. Sometimes it's just someone cooking in the house, get busy in another room. Next thing you know, the pot on the stove's on fire. Yeah, we had a best I can recall about four of those last month that actually did damage to the house.
I guess you should always be in the kitchen when you're cooking, first of all.
Yes.
But are most of these on the stove or in the oven?
It's mostly the fires come from on the stovetop cooker. The oven, usually if it's a fire in there, you can keep it shut. It doesn't spread. It will scare a lot of folks to see the flames in the stove. But if you just keep the stove shut, cut the power off to it, it's the best place for it to be, actually, you know, because the oven is made to withstand heat. But on the top, on the cookers, the eyes, it's just an open flame, gets into your cabinets, and it can spread quickly.
And then grease fires, that's another one, I guess, that spreads very fast.
It is. Just remember, maybe try to put a top on it. Don't make the mistake of trying to pick it up and carry it outside. It always does not end well. You know, if you do have a fire extinguisher, you can use that, you know, just to stop the flames.
And then what should we put on a grease fire that we have in our house? I mean, what?
You can put baking soda is the best thing to put on them.
Then water, that typically spreads it around?
No water. People think water, you can put on grease, and you know, but if you do, it just splashes and spreads the fire.
Is that what happens sometimes? I mean, when you see these house
fires? We have seen that. A lot of people, whatever they're cooking, it dries out so much. That catches on fire, and then it starts spreading. It creates a lot of heat in the flames and usually gets into the cabinets, and that's where the fire will really start burning.
Is every single house fire investigated whenever you do get the call and there's a house fire that's an actual fire?
We do. We investigate all of our fires that we have, and sometimes, typically, it's cut and dry what happened. Don't want to accuse anybody, but if their story's not lining up, we may get into a deeper investigation. But a lot of people think if they've caused the fire themselves that their insurance is not going to pay. But it is an accident, so the insurance will pay for stuff like that. We do have a few arson cases here and there. I think it was last week we prosecuted one on an arson case. I've seen this so many times where people may be having a cigar on the back porch or something like that, and they swear they don't smoke, and it leads right back to the ashtray where maybe smoking products were at. Because they're afraid I caused this fire, I'm going to have to pay for it. The insurance is not going to pay for it, but the insurance pays for accidents.
Or their wife may find out they're smoking a cigar.
That's true, too. That could be the case.
So do we have a lot of insurance fraud here in Rutherford County and Murfreesboro? I mean, have you seen a fair share?
Not well. When you say insurance fraud, if you commit arson and you file an insurance claim, that is going to be insurance fraud. But even though you still may be charged with arson, but not insurance fraud, because you burn your place down, but you didn't try to make an insurance claim. Now, once you try to do that insurance claim, then you're frauding the insurance company. So that's the insurance will step in on that.
That would kind of go beyond the fire department, right? Because your investigation is solely the arson case.
That is correct. We're here to prove that it is arson and prosecute the person for arson. Any other kind of charges that may come with it will come from law enforcement.
Man, you used to hear a lot of stories about arsonists, and it seems like over the last few years we haven't heard as many, but are there still folks out there who just want to light a fire because they want to see something burn?
You still have those every now and then. Sometimes there's stuff that burns maybe in the opening, like maybe a dumpster or a field fire, or, you know, some trash on the side of the road, or a bonfire, or some piled up wood or something. Some of those have been set. You can tell they were set. And that somebody just maybe wanting to see something burn, but not to the degree of burning a house down. We hadn't had that in a while. I can remember several years ago, we had several arson cases that we linked back to one person. And it was kind of like you see on the movies. I mean, this person was setting the fires and he was the one in the crowd watching them, you know.
Wow.
But here recently, we hadn't had anything on our radar like that.
People can be strange.
They can.
Hey, you never can tell what they're going to do.
You know, that's what I tell the people when I come on the fire scene. It's like, you know, I'm going to come to the scene, not here to tell you what to do, but I'm still like to see stuff burn and get stuff put out. You know, that's the fireman in me. But some people take it to the extreme, wanting to see fire.
I remember a number of years back, the cedar bucket at Cannonsburg,
yes,
that caught fire.
That is correct, yeah.
And it was Murfreesboro Fire that put that one out.
That is correct. I was trying to remember what year that was, but that was arson on that bucket, yeah.
And I think the city rebuilt that cedar bucket, and now they have a new one in place,
That is correct, yeah.
But yeah, it's always interesting the different strange things that people will do. I mean, you just, it's hard to be surprised these days.
Very much so, but every now and then you still get surprised.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, what are some of the other things happening right now in the city that you guys have worked recently, or any new equipment or anything like that?
Yeah, currently right now we are working, we just got through with our budget and our CIP with the city, and we're looking at building a new fire station here within the next year or two. Kind of in our radars, we got two new stations coming along, maybe one in the next year or two, like I said, and the next one maybe 2 to 3 years after that. Right now, we're looking out on the Veterans Parkway area right there at 840, and also Joe B. Jackson in Manchester Highway area. Both of those areas, when you run the data on it, they're pretty equal what you need, one versus the other, where it needs to be. So we're looking at that. I got a presentation coming up to a council workshop. I think it's this Thursday. Share that data with them just to give them an idea of what's going on, not making any decisions which one's going to be built or if we're building one. But it's just to share some data on that.
Now, right now, there's one on Veterans near, what is it, Armstrong Valley?
Yes, there is a station on Station 10 on Veterans right now.
And so if there was one on Veterans near 840, that'd be close to the new future city Veterans Park.
Actually, it is in the corner of that property down by Shores and, well, the old Shores Road right there by the bank and Veterans.
So is that across the street from the new park?
No, it's on the same side as the park.
Oh, on the same side, okay.
It's kind of, best way to describe it would be across from TOA in that area. There's, I think it's a Liberty Bank there. It's on the opposite corner on the same side of the street.
Is that area of town growing just as fast as everywhere else with subdivisions and apartments?
It is. That's the boom town right now on that side of town. It's with that 840 exit, Veterans getting you around town good. There's, you know, if you've noticed in the last couple of years, we've had a Publix come in, we've had a couple of gas stations out there, McDonald's, Taco Bell. I think there's plans for a hotel out there. There's a lot of plans for that area coming online. we know it's going to continue to grow. So we're just preparing, you know, for that growth. That's the reason we need a station in that area.
Are there any other areas of town that don't have a fire department yet? You plan to put one in?
Yes. The other location we're looking at is out on Joby Jackson, which is close to Manchester Highway area. It's a lot of industrial growth out there. A lot of new homes coming in, a condo living out that way. And that area seems to be growing pretty good, too.
So who serves that area right now? I mean, I know it's the city, but I mean, which unit?
It depends on exactly what side of that area. Like now, Station 2 from Church Street, if it's somewhere on Joby Jackson close to the I-24 area, that engine will be coming. But on the Manchester Highway side, it's Station 3 off of Martin Luther King Drive. And that's one of the reasons the response time for both of those engines coming to those calls is a little bit higher than what we want. And that's one of the reasons the need of a station in that area.
And while it may not feel that great out there today, it has been warming up, which means more people on motorcycles. There's been an increase in motorcycle crashes, not only here, but in Nashville as well. There's been quite a few lately.
Yeah, it seems like every time you watch the news, you're seeing a motorcycle crash. We've had just in the last week, we've already had a couple of them, and one of them actually was a fatality. It's just that time of the year, you know, people are out driving, take that extra second to look for motorcycles. You know, they should have their headlights on. They're harder to see, but just take that second look and look for them.
Do most of those motorcycle crashes end in a fatality?
Not every time. Usually if they are, it's speed involved when I say that, or someone just pulling directly out in front of the motorcycle, where the speed is not that big of a factor. It's just the impact of whatever speed you're doing. And I've seen them too. Just someone, the time of year, buying a new motorcycle that's never ridden before, just maybe going a little too fast, took the curve too much. And I've seen those type of accidents causing just bumps and bruises, and then other times not ending as well.
When you're working a crash like that, or any crash that takes a little bit longer to work, where they're, you know, the police are out there investigating as well, do family members, do they receive a phone call from the scene, or how does that usually unfold?
On a vehicle crash, the police department would be the one doing the notification. The fire department's primary response on that is getting to the wreck scene, controlling the wreck scene, and giving patient care and getting the patient to treatment. Then after that, the police department comes in and does their investigation, the facts team if needed, or just, you know, a regular officer doing an accident report. They do that, and they have a process of notifying family if it's very serious.
And the wide array of jobs that the fire department has today versus, you know, 20 years ago, it's changed quite a bit.
It has. It's like most people know, I've been here for several years, and when I first come here, we were just a fire department, and now we have grown into, fire departments are, if you call 911 and you don't need a police officer, it's fire department. We're an all-resource department now, whatever it may be.
So from heart attacks to fires, literally all over the place.
Heart attacks to fires, you know, medical calls, just anything we respond to.
I know sometimes in the county, as an example, and sometimes in other counties, they'll even call fire crews out to help search for somebody if somebody's missing, not just on the water.
I know. Yes, that is correct. We have an urban search and rescue team within our department that does searches like that, not only just searching for, a lot of times it's we have dementia patients walk away. We know they're in the area. We have a drone team that can put up drones and look for them with certain cameras. You know, sometimes even that's urban search and rescue team, also like if you have a tornado come through and you have devastation, if people still in these locations, they go in these houses that may be collapsed, do a search on that, which is collapse class that goes along with the urban search and rescue, just making sure it's clear. Just any kind of rescue that needs to be done like that.
Have you guys had any searches recently?
Yes. I tell you, we have them, I don't want to say regularly, but at Barfield Park, we have people maybe get off the trail a little bit and get lost. It's dark on them. We go find them. From time to time, we have people with dementias walking off. We've had kids walk off. It's usually a case that has something tied to it. We're not out looking for a missing kid that got mad and left home. We're out looking for a kid or an adult or whoever that may have an illness that caused them to wander away from home like that. Or even if someone's out, just doing something for the day and gets lost in the woods. And we know they're out there, which we don't have that much because the city don't have a lot of wooded areas that causes that.
At Barfield Park, it has been kind of surprising at times as to how many people have gotten lost in the woods there, but it does happen.
It does. You know, it's several trails to walk on. I'm sure when it grows up, you know, this time of year when everything starts blooming, it can get a little confusing where you're at.
In those cases, is it usually somebody who walks off the actual marked trail, or are they still on the trail? They just haven't made it back in time before dark?
Yeah, well, a lot of times it gets dark on them. They bit off a little bit more they can chew, you know, get way up in the woods and think, oh, we'll make it back before dark, and they don't. Then they get confused on where they're at and not able to see how to get back. Best case scenario, those people do have a cell phone with them. Sometimes we can ping their phone and walk right to them, or it helps them, helps find them. Also in Barfield Park too, we'll have injuries. You know, we have had people hiking get short of breath. We have the equipment, and, you know, we have our ATVs that are equipped to transport a patient on the back of them. We can go up the trail and get them, bring them in, which that happens on the greenway also too, not just necessarily the parks. And anywhere else we use them. That's where we use them a lot. We just had an incident the other day. It was a bicycle wreck. When he wrecked on his bike, he went down a little bluff down into the river and was injured. So we had to come in. We, of course, activated our ATVs and sent them. Had to put him in a Stoltz basket and do basically a rope rescue. We had to bring him back up the embankment with his injury and transport him to the hospital.
That's pretty scary. So he not only fell off his bike, but literally fell off an embankment.
Yes, he probably wrecked in the worst place you could wreck. I'm not sure what caused the wreck, but he wrecked his bicycle and went down the embankment, and he was stuck down on the embankment next to the river.
Man, that could have gone really bad.
It could have.
Gosh.
But, you know, he had some people with him, was able to call it in, give a good location. We got to him and did our thing.
I think naturally one of the fears people have whenever they go hiking, especially somewhere like Barfield Park, is, well, what if I get injured? What if I have a heart attack while hiking? But good news is you guys can still get in there and rescue them.
We can, and we ask people, be vigilant of where you're at. There's some markers on the trail, you know, just kind of keep up, because you never know when something's going to happen. We have three ATVs, four-wheelers or side-by-sides, whatever you want to call them. We got them located to where we can hit the trail pretty easily. We got one out on Church Street, one on Medical Center, and one out on Thompson Lane, where they can hit, basically you can start at either end of the greenway and one right in the middle.
Okay, so you keep them like parked on site somewhere?
No, they're at the station. Of course, they're street legal. And Station 4 on Medical Center, all they got to do is go out the back door down a trail. They don't even have to get on the street. Station 2, which is on Church Street, has to go down Church Street a little bit and turn on the Barfield Road in there at the park there or the trailhead. And Station 7 is just a quarter mile down the street, and they can hit the trailhead there at the river on Thompson Lane.
So if we see a ATV flying down South Church, it's probably yeah, going to help somebody.
Exactly. And, you know, we try to get out in the summertime, especially when people are walking, just to do some PR, just get the guys out, ride, do the greenway, give some water out if people need it and stuff. Let them know that we are there.
How much more active are the waterways come summertime? I mean, because I know that the depth of the Stones River is not real deep, but are they really active with not only kayakers, but people inner tubing or just playing
yes,
in the river?
They're very active. After the greenway come through several years ago and it opened up Stones River, the creeks and rivers through here, more people go to them. And of course, kayaking has gotten so popular now. Just about everybody that likes water has got a kayak now. So we see it a lot. Luckily, we don't deal with a lot of swift water. Usually, a kayak accident or whatever is tied to maybe a medical situation that someone couldn't get back. And a lot of times we have had it get dark on people, and they just get lost on the river and just need a little help. I can't recall of any just a kayak accident to where we had to go in and you know, and rescue them from whatever situation might have been from the accident. It's usually something other than just a kayak accident that causes us to have to go out to them.
How in the world do you find them at nighttime? Because it's pretty dark on the river.
Well, if we got a location where we think that we know they're at, we can ping them on their phone if they have a phone. That's where our drone systems come in. We can put them up in the air, and it has infrared. We can find them that way. And just manpower putting them on the river with lights looking for them. Sometimes just a good old-fashioned, hey, can you hear me?
They'll actually respond.
Yeah.
That's a good sign there.
Yeah.
What else is happening around this time of year? Because it is a more active time. Kids are about to get out of school. They're about to graduate. With that being said, I'm guessing there's more partying, there's more drinking, things along those lines.
Yes, actually, the summertime, more people get more active, get out and do stuff and having a good time, and accidents happen. July, the month of July, Vanderbilt recognizes that as trauma month. That's where they have the most traumas, is that month. And that's from vehicle accidents, whatever makes them go up, and people out doing sporting events, getting hurt and stuff like that. So the more active people are, the more injuries and stuff that's going to happen, just more people out moving.
How big of a deal is alcohol today versus, 20 years ago? Or are drugs the larger problem?
When you say drugs and alcohol, if we're having a situation to where, let's take for a car wreck, for instance, we're not there to judge that person if they're drinking or not. We're there to help them. An accident has happened, no matter whose fault it is or what caused it. We can ask sometimes, because depending on the injury, we need to know if you've had some drugs or alcohol in you. And I've seen this myself. Some people don't want to say it because, oh, I'm going to be in trouble. But we're doing it from the medical side. When it comes to someone having an issue with drugs or alcohol of a wreck, that's more of a police side. But we do see it. I mean, sometimes it's just very obvious that you see it. It does happen. Seen more in the summer. People are having parties outside. It seems like there's more accidents involve alcohol during that time of year, because I guess the nice weather, people want to get out and cookouts and stuff like that, maybe consume too much. Now, the drug problem, over all the years I've been here, I've never seen anything like this. It seems like it has slowed down a little bit, but it's a daily event of overdose. I don't make calls like I used to, but I still stay up to date by listening to the radio and stuff, and it seems like now you're hearing overdose in high schools and even middle schools. And that, just like when you hear that, it's like, is that a student or somebody walk up? Why are they going to a middle school for overdose? It's really bothersome to me to hear that you're running to a middle school for an overdose.
It's hard to believe. I mean, when you think about it, because you're talking 12, 13 years old.
Yes. The thing about it, overdose seems to be like a new word. My theory on it is you still have people that are doing drugs. I don't know what the numbers would be today as they were several years ago, but now what they're putting into drugs is causing more people to overdose. You know, this fentanyl, it's just out of control. It's just, you don't never know what it'll be in. You know, I've never dreamed of going to a call with someone overdosing on marijuana. And it's because something had been added to it.
Is it hard at times when you're trying to help somebody medically, is it hard at times to figure out, is this a drug they're on, or is it some type of mental problem, like schizophrenia? What exactly is going on here?
It can. I mean, in our training, when you do your medical training, there's signs to watch out for, noticing that stuff. Sometimes, it's easy to determine. Sometimes it's not. We give a Narcan for overdose. If it is somebody mental and you give them Narcan, you're not going to cause much trouble or injury to the body by giving them that. But if it is an overdose, you've done a good thing. It's a fine line there sometimes. Sometimes it's hard to read, especially how the patient may be acting, and you can't really get a good evaluation of them.
And then what does happen if they receive Narcan and it's not a drug overdose?
Well, it's just going to go into their body. It's not going to cause any negative effects other than maybe a little drowsiness and stuff like that, maybe heart rate up. Other than that, if there's no narcotics in them, it's not going to affect them. But if the narcotics are in them, it will stop that effect.
That's good. I always wondered that. I didn't know.
It's kind of like maybe taking aspirin if you don't have a headache. It's not going to hurt you.
Interesting. Again, Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey is in studio with us today. We're going to take a short break, and then we will be right back.
The Action Line on FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna. Listen and watch at WGNSradio.com.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Lessons, we got that. Drums and every other instrument with strings or keys. Music World and Drummer's Den, the one-stop shop where you have everything that you might need. Ukuleles, violins, things that they're not expecting to find just everywhere they go. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den. 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course. Music World and Drummer's Den.
And I would highly recommend Adam's Place. It's a place to enjoy life. It's comfortable. The settings are home-like and not sterile. Adam's Place is a place they're looking out for you. You feel at home, and I'm very fortunate there's a lot of people here I already knew. To get back to the food, I want to say one thing. The chef does a fabulous job here. I'm Larry Castelli, and you know, I would highly recommend Adam's Place.
In today's changing world, you need a financial planner that you're comfortable with. Rely on the bonds that you've built with trusted friends at Old National Bank on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard here in the borough. And if you just moved here, visit us and enjoy warm, homemade cookies.
Honey, the cookies are ready.
Like Grandma used to make. Old National Bank, we're better together.
2230 Dr. MLK Jr. Boulevard. Old National Bank, member FDIC.
No middlemen, no mystery, just fresh picked produce. Straight from the Tennessee dirt to your dinner table.
Rutherford County Farmers Market,
where our family feeds your family.
Rutherford County Farmers Market, there's something fresh every week. Tuesdays and Fridays, 7 to 1, on John R. Rice Boulevard.
This is a WGNS Action Line. Now your host, Scott Walker.
Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey is in studio with us today. Now, I know you are celebrating this year, what, 40 years at the fire department?
Yeah, this past February, I had 40 years in.
That's a long time. You've seen a lot of change.
Lots of changes.
One of the things you mentioned on one of the past shows was the introduction of electric or hybrid fire trucks.
That is correct. I do remember seeing some kind of social media posts like, we don't need electric fire trucks. We're not getting them, far as I know. It's not something I'd say yes or no to right now. But here in the city, it's Oshkosh that builds electric vehicles, and Oshkosh is the owner of the company Pierce that builds fire trucks. So they're building the electric garbage trucks out off of Joe B. Jackson right now, and they are also bringing in some of the fire apparatuses that are doing a certain work on there and shipping them back out. But some of the electric fire trucks, some of it's being built right here in Murfreesboro.
They're hybrids, right? They're diesel backup?
Well, a hybrid kind of works back and forth, you know, when you need more power, the engine kicks on. When you don't, that's electric. These are truly electric fire trucks, but they have to have a diesel engine in them, because a fire truck, it's not like, okay, you can't right in the middle of a fire say, hey, our battery's getting low, let's go back to the station.
That would be scary.
So if it's pumping water, the diesel engine is going to kick in to maintain that for hours if it needs it, where the electric motor could not do that. But far as going down the street, say medical calls where you're not flowing, it would be 100% electric.
Is there not a fear of electric cars are super quiet? So if you had an electric fire truck, it'd be pretty quiet as well.
I would say so, yeah. Maybe a little bit louder than the vehicles, just the weight of the going down the road on the tires, you know, because I pay attention to it myself, like on the square the other night. A car come by and said, oh, that was an electric car. It just sound like a little bitty sewing machine going by or something. It's like I could see how people, because you depend on your senses, maybe walking out in front because you don't hear a car coming or something like that. And I have heard that there's some electric vehicles, I can't for sure say it, but they have little sound makers on them so you can hear the car coming.
Yeah, I know in the beginning when all these electric vehicles were being introduced, you did have more people getting hit by them because they didn't hear anything.
Yeah, I have heard of that, yes.
A giant fire truck that doesn't make a sound, that'd be a little scary.
Yeah, it could be, for sure. You know, I still have my mixed feelings about electric vehicles. I have a friend of mine, or actually a cousin, that has one of those Tesla trucks, and I've ridden in it. It's really nice and stuff. I don't know if I have that 100% satisfaction of knowing that I don't have electric or gas motor and stop on any gas station and keep going, you know.
Yeah, I see, that is what would 100% hold me back right there. I want to be able to know if I need to stop and get gas. Yes. I can do that. But if I run out of a charge, I don't want to have to search when I have no charge left to go find a place to charge.
It's pretty interesting how that works. You know, when he uses his GPS, say, to drive to Florida, it may take him a little different route and knows when he needs to pull over and at a charging station. And a lot of these charging stations, you don't see them. They're off kind of the beaten path, and it's like something we don't really pay attention to. But if you have an electric vehicle, it's like, oh, it's, you know, there's one here I didn't know about.
See, to me, that sounds like it's going to take longer to drive to the beach. And that, that's not what you want.
No. You know, you can save that money on the gas, but it's...
Yeah, but is it worth it if it takes you an extra 8 hours?
True. That's just...
It's long enough already.
Exactly.
But yeah, electric fire trucks, that's something I'd never thought we would ever see. But as of right now, we're not going to see it in Murfreesboro, it sounds like.
Not anytime in the near future.
Of course, electric semi-trucks, you know, we hear more about that. And that's what you're saying. They're making part of those electric garbage trucks here in Murfreesboro than the same with the fire trucks.
Yeah. And, you know, the passenger vehicles made that turn, and there seems to be more and more people making passenger vehicles in electric, so the industry is going to follow that, you know, the bigger trucks and all.
Interesting. And times have definitely changed a lot.
Times have changed.
Then as far as the equipment that goes on the fire trucks today, I'm assuming there's a lot more equipment than there used to be, so that's a heavier load too.
It is. We carry quite a bit of equipment, you know, and the truck itself has changed in so many ways. Used to, on the pump panel, it was twisting the knob that's hooked to a cable to run the throttle up. Now it's all, you know, computerized, and our equipment, for the most part, it's still kind of the same. Like an axe is an axe. It hadn't changed much, you know.
Yeah.
It's not really computer operated. And, we, you know, of course, there's been some changes over the years with them, but we still carry a lot of equipment. And that's one thing. We have so much equipment now, it gets hard to put all the equipment on the truck that's big as you can get, because anything else is going to have to be bigger. You know, and in the future, we've looked at maybe down the line, maybe getting a truck that's what they call a tiller. It's a bigger truck. It can turn sharper. It's like a tractor and trailer, and you have someone driving in the back. You can put more equipment on it and get a taller ladder. The trucks we have now, we can go up to 110 feet. You can't go much higher than that unless you go to a bigger truck and a different style.
You're talking about the driver, the back. Those are the trucks like we would see in pictures in New York or Chicago.
Yes,
or...
And it's years ago, your big cities, they used them a lot because you can get around the city real good. And we really didn't have that problem. Our population wasn't that big. There wasn't as many buildings. We had plenty of room to make turns. Now it's not like that is in most areas. And this is just an easier way to get a bigger piece of equipment and more equipment to the fire scene that you need at a safer way.
Is it that hard to drive those? I mean, with somebody steering in the back, just like there's somebody steering in the front too.
Well, yes, I do know if you purchase one of those, they come down and give you a class on how to drive. Because
you would need it.
Yes, depends on how you order it, because the tiller man in the back sometimes, when they turn right, it makes it go left. When you turn left, it makes it go right. But you can have it changed, turn right, you go right. So it can be complicated.
Especially in an emergency situation. I mean, if you're rushing and not really thinking, that could get dangerous fast.
Oh, yeah, it could be. Of course, if we ever do get one, we'll be for sure be trained up to par before we release that on the road.
A number of years back, there was this video that came out on social media of, it was at a fire scene where I believe a truck hauling a camper caught on fire, and the firemen pulled up and they did not put any locks underneath the wheel of the truck and the camper, and the truck actually rolled into the fire truck. Have you seen that?
I have seen that. You know, in our standard procedures on a fire scene like that, or anytime we're out, we apply our parking brakes, which should hold it at any time, but we have chalk blocks, and you have to put your chalk blocks down.
I would imagine videos like that become training material very fast.
Oh, they do. Yeah, anytime that you can find something that's got a little humor, but it's good training, we watch it. Our guys stay on top of that.
Have y'all ever had a vehicle that was on fire that started rolling?
I have had that. I don't know why I can remember this so good, but it was over on Middle Tennessee, right there at Bell Street. There was a car on fire at that intersection, and people got out, and we pulled up, and it started easing back. I guess they'd left it in neutral or maybe even dry, and it started rolling back. Quick thinking of one of the firefighters just took his helmet off and scotched the tire and stopped it, and we put it out and took care of it.
Of course, fewer people, I guess, drive manuals these days, so
yes.
That's...
Exactly.
Solves part of the problem.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you hardly ever see them anymore.
unless you're buying a big truck, that's about the only way you get them now.
That's true. Now, as we close this morning, are you guys hiring, or what are the latest? What's the latest news in employment?
Well, right now we're still in good shape. We were fully staffed there at once. We're down just a couple people now, but that's not enough to hire a group of people, because we need several people. We can operate missing two people, but we need to have a group of people to run a rookie class. So we'll wait to maybe usually after July. Sometimes at budget year, people retire. Some others may go to a different job, which fortunately we have not had that since last August. But we'll see if we can get up to about 8 or so people. We'll have another recruitment class.
Now, a lot of those who do come to the fire department, have they already been through the state training?
Some have and some have not. We'll hire a lateral employee. You know, we take applications for both, which is someone that's had all that training. And we also will hire what we call rookies that hadn't had the first thing and give them all the training. I know in the past, sometimes if we're not going to have a rookie class, we may have a lateral person where we don't have to put on a class for one person or something like that. But when we have a big hiring class, we look for both because, you know, there's positive and negatives to both having a lateral or someone brand new. A brand new person that has not ever been to a fire or anything, sometimes it's good for them to get a fresh start and learn one way. I don't want to say our way. I mean, our way that we teach is state certified and it's good for everybody, but they don't have any bad habits they bring with them. And on the other hand, hiring a lateral, you got somebody that's already trained as an EMT. They're state certified firefighters and they know all this stuff. And we give them our own little in-house training to get them up to Murfreesboro standards the way we like things here. And we can put them right on a truck and get them to work.
Sounds good. And we're already out of time. Again, with us this morning, Murfreesboro Fire and Rescue Chief Mark McCluskey. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's glad to be here.